welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering broadcasts from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Mystery in this hour. Later on, an episode of The Fat Man from 1951. But first, movie actor Alan Ladd stars as Detective Dan Holliday in Box 13. This episode called Much Too Lucky, heard on Mutual on May 1st, 1949.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, Kev Star Times. I'm a betting agent in my state where betting agents are legal. I'm one of the many who are being taken for plenty. I think there's something haywire, but none of us have been able to figure it out. Now, since you'd be a stranger here, we figure you'd have a better than even chance of nosing.
And finding out how we're getting clipped. If you do, we'll pay. If you don't, maybe you'll have yourself an adventure anyway. My name is Bert Hendricks. Look me up at 6729 Sierra Way. Enclosed is enough money to take care of immediate expenses. Have a look, huh? Yeah, I had a look, all right. Right into the muzzle of a nasty 25 automatic.
Are you going to be gone long, Mr. Holliday?
Well, I don't know, Susie. That all depends.
On what?
On what happens.
Oh, what could happen?
Where I'm concerned, anything.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I get worried about you, Mr. Holliday.
Sometimes?
Most times. It's just like a nomination.
Oh? What am I running for?
Huh?
Nothing. I just had a premonition.
What's that?
What you didn't have.
I don't get it.
Well, you work on it until I get back, Susie. I'm off to the races. The plane trip was quick and pleasant. And 8 hours after I said goodbye to Susie, I was talking with Bert Hendricks. Big, nice-looking fellow, but with a worried look on his face. After we had introduced ourselves, Hendricks let me know what was putting the wrinkles between his eyes.
Oh, it's got us roped and tied like a Christmas package, Dan.
Huh? How much are you losing?
Plenty. Runs into 4 or 5 figures every week.
Maybe somebody's being lucky.
To be that lucky, a guy'd have to be born with a silver horseshoe in his mouth. Look, yesterday I paid off on a long shot at 40-1. The clip ran to the tune of 20,000.
And that, as they say in books, is sugar with a capital S.
It'd buy a lot of coffee. Anyway, we figure we're getting it the wrong way. Clip, bamboozled.
Well, why don't you go to the police?
With what, troubles? That's not the answer.
Have you tried to find out?
Are you kidding? We ran ourselves into a lather trying to catch the angle. No dice. Dan, somebody in this town's plenty smart. Smart enough to know our boys.
And that brings me in.
That's right. You're a stranger. They won't take a second look at you. I caught your ad in the Star Times and played the bet. Well, here you are.
With nothing to do.
How much do you want?
Well, believe it or not, Bert, I do this for nothing.
Yeah, I heard you say that before, but I don't get your dodge.
My what?
Your gimmick. Dodge, racket, angle.
Oh. Well, I figure if the plot's good enough, I can use it in the story.
Okay, but no dough?
I'll tell you what, Bert. If I figure this, will you turn over what you'd give me to any charity I name?
Here's a blank check. Fill in the amount, I'll sign it. But try to catch the capers that are putting the shellac on us.
With nothing to start on, I've got a job.
They're smart, plenty smart. What they win is over and beyond the run of luck or chance.
Any ideas?
Yeah. One.
Oh, what's that?
They got a guy with a crystal ball.
That the best you can do?
Come on in the wire room with me. See if we can catch anything.
Well, up front?
Uh-huh. This way.
And we're getting ready now for the third race of the day.
We've got a radio back here, broadcasting direct from the track. Comes over a local station.
Oh, and where are the bets placed?
Right here, or by phone.
I see. And you take bets up until the time the horses are at the post.
That's right. But once the race starts, no more bets. Listen to the race.
Now he's in place. We're ready. And they're off.
Hiya, Bert.
Hi, Billy. How's it going?
Somebody called up and got a century on party line.
Oh, the 20-1 shot?
That's right. Oh, Billy, this is a friend of mine, Dan Holliday.
Hiya.
Hello, Billy.
Party line wins, Bert. It's the fourth long shot this week that's played off.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And each one was bet on. Is that it?
But heavy.
I still say there's one of them guys that's doing it by telepathy.
Listen.
At the half that's mine, owned by half a length over Cantilever, Rocket is third and falling back with Old Joe as party line still swings wide and moves up on the outside. Coming into the turn now with mine owned by a head over Cantilever and moving up fast on the outside is party line in third.
There he comes.
Who made that bet on party line?
Mike took the call.
Okay. Get me the name of the guy who made the bet.
Sure. Right away.
Listen to that.
Mine owned and party line. It's mine owned by a half over party line and it's a driving finish with mine owned in front by a nose. Party line getting up the whip and moving up. Up and across the finish is party line by a head over my own.
Oh, 20 to 1.
And $100 at 20 to 1.
Don't say it. Don't say it. Come on. Let's go back to my office. Oh, Dan, I don't get it. How can they pick long shots like that?
Is it only long shots?
No. No, not always. Sometimes it's the favorite, but it's always a winner. And I say no guy can pick a winner every race. Especially every long shot. Come in.
Want to know who placed that 100 on party line, Bert?
Yeah.
Here's the tab.
Oh, her again.
She's awful lucky.
Yeah, too lucky.
Who is it?
Name's Vaughn. Terry Vaughn. Singer at one of the clubs here.
She's done this before, huh?
Yeah, she's done it before. 20 grand today, 5 last week. Why doesn't she retire and leave here?
Well, she can.
Look, Dan. We've got this betting narrowed down to about 20 people.
20?
Yep. The most consistent winners. They never lose.
Oh, a ring, is that it?
That's right. But not one of them is ever at the track.
You mean they just don't go?
That's right, never.
I don't get it.
Neither do we.
Oh, Billy.
Yeah?
This call from Terry Vaughn came in just before the horses were at the post, huh?
Sure. We take bets up to the break.
What are you thinking about, Dan?
I was just wondering if there was any way of getting advance information on a race.
You kidding? Not a chance. This is a business with us. Legitimate. On the level. We know every angle and dodge. There's no way anyone could know before the race that a long shot like party line was going to nose across first.
You've got yourself a problem.
All right. How about taking a slice of it, Dan? What I said about that blank check still goes.
Okay, you've got yourself a boy.
Good.
I don't know where I'll start, but as they say in books, everything has a beginning. So, why not start with Terry Vaughn? Waiter. Oh, waiter.
Oh, yes, sir?
I wonder if you'd deliver this note for me.
Certainly, sir. Where to?
Miss Terry Vaughn.
I'll see about it, sir.
Will this make you see any better?
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Oh, and tell Miss Vaughn I'm a journalist.
Newspaper man?
Yes, I guess that's it. You see, I'd like an interview.
Well, I'll see what I can do, sir. I'll do my very best.
I waited. I didn't know what Miss Terry Vaughn could tell me or wouldn't tell, but it was a chance. She didn't know me, so she wouldn't be suspicious. It was 10 minutes later that the waiter came back to my table.
Miss Vaughn will see you, Mr. Holliday.
Oh? How did you know my name?
It was on the card you sent with the note.
Simple, isn't it, Dr. Watson?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, never mind. Now, where's Miss Vaughn?
Oh, she'll be here in a moment.
Oh. Okay, I'll wait.
Yes, sir. Glad to have been of service.
I waited, and I'll admit the wait was worthwhile. Miss Terry Vaughn glided across the floor to my table, smiled $5,000 worth of teeth, tossed $1 million in red hair over her shoulder, and put $10 million of the rest of her in the chair across from me.
You're Mr. Holliday.
You're Miss Vaughn.
Mm-hmm. Your note said you wanted to interview me.
That's right.
Well, I'm flattered.
I imagine that's a fairly common situation with you.
What paper are you with, Mr. Holliday?
I have a connection with the Star Times.
Oh, you're a big city boy.
I didn't know it showed.
Why do you want to interview me?
Oh, lots of reasons, Miss Vaughn.
Name one.
Well, I heard you were very lucky today.
Lucky? How?
Or do you win 20,000 every day?
What does this have to do with an interview?
Well, it's human interest stuff, Miss Vaughn. Very human and very interesting.
I see. But why pick on my lucky streak?
Because it was so lucky.
Oh. I've always been lucky.
Oh, I can understand that. Oh, how did you happen to pick Party Line today?
I like long shots.
Always?
When I feel lucky.
Do you ever lose?
Sometimes. Why?
Oh, I'm just asking.
Mr. Holliday, this is a peculiar interview.
Oh, I don't think so. Just pleasant.
What paper did you say you were with?
The Star Times.
And what are you doing here?
Vacation.
When is it over?
A couple of weeks.
I see. Well, Mr. Holliday, as far as I'm concerned, it's over now. Have a nice time.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Please stay here.
Why?
I feel that I owe you an apology.
For what?
For being so curious.
All right. We'll forget it.
Let's do. Let's forget all about $20,000, long shots, and lucky streaks.
And what shall we substitute?
Terry Vaughn. Do you mind?
I don't mind if I do, Mr. Holliday.
Well, it was a pleasant way to spend an evening. But when it was over, I was just as smart as at the beginning, which was zero. Maybe Terry Vaughn was lucky, but how lucky can you be? The next day, I met Bert Hendricks, and he had more trouble.
Well, somebody did it again today, Dan. Not quite as big as Terry's play yesterday, but enough. Enough.
One of the same 20 people you've tabbed?
One of the 20.
If it weren't for the fact that it's those same 20 people all the time, it could be just luck.
Could be. You saw Terry last night?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw Terry.
And?
A very lovely girl.
I wish I had her money. It's mine. That's funny.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bert. I don't have to ask if you've watched those 20 people.
Oh, sure we have. They don't talk to anyone connected with the track. As far as I know, they don't even know anyone there.
There's got to be a gimmick.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling myself in the head.
Look, Bert, let's try to figure it out logically. You say every one of those bets is placed just before the race is run.
That's right.
And each of those 20 people picks a winner.
Yeah. Not only with me, but with all the other agents who have the same setup I've got.
Then how could they get advance information?
They can't.
They've got to, Bert.
Dan, we've been all over that.
Yeah, maybe there's an angle you've overlooked.
Okay, name it and I'll buy it.
Is there any particular race or races they always bet? What races do you lose the most heavily on?
Wait a minute. That is an angle.
You think of something?
Maybe. Wait a second. I'm going to check. I think I'm right, but I'll make sure.
Hello?
Hello, Billy. This is Bert.
Yeah?
What race is being run now?
Time for the sixth.
Do you have any big bets?
Nope.
Were there any of the 20 on this one?
Nope.
Which ones did they hit?
Third, fourth, fifth.
That's all?
Yeah, why?
Nothing. See you later.
Well?
Third, fourth, and fifth. That's what I thought. Never the first, second, or the sixth, seventh, or eighth.
Always the third, fourth, or fifth.
That's right. But where's the gimmick?
I don't know. But hand me the phone.
Here.
Thanks. Now, what's the phone number of the club where Terry Vaughn works?
No, I don't know. It's in the directory. But why? What's that got to do with this?
Bert, I don't know yet. But I'm going to ask the lovely Terry Vaughn if she'll go out with me tomorrow afternoon.
Afternoon? What are you getting at?
Your money, I hope. Hand me the directory. Well, I had an idea. Not a big one, and not one that made sense yet. But I was going to play it. So the next afternoon, I met Miss Terry Vaughn for lunch. I arranged the time so we'd be together just about the same time the horses went to the post for the third race. We sat in a little cafe.
I was really surprised that you called me, Dan.
Oh? Why, Terry?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because you seem more interested in my luck than in me.
The two go together.
I suppose so. Do you ever play the races?
No, I never have. But there's always a first time.
That's what they all say.
Why do you ask? Got something good? As they say in the vernacular?
Oh, I never get tips.
Ah, but you win.
Occasionally.
What's your secret?
What makes you think it's a secret?
That was just a figure of speech. But let's talk about something else.
Oh, what time is it?
Oh, 2:20. Why? Thinking of leaving me so soon?
No, but I have something to do around 3.
Ah, important?
To me, yes.
I see. Well, shall we take a walk?
Yes, I'd like to.
Okay, that's it. So we walked. Terry was very charming. I was beginning to wonder about my hunch. Maybe it was luck after all. Then a few minutes after three...
Dan, will you excuse me for a few minutes?
Oh, your important 3 o'clock date.
That's it. I have to make a phone call.
Want me to wait?
Yes, if you want to.
Oh, I do.
I'll make it from this drugstore.
All right. I'll wait right here.
I won't be more than a few minutes.
She went into the drugstore and straight to a phone booth. I slipped inside, went to a counter. The clerk came up to me.
May I help you, sir?
Yes. Let me see a pair of those binoculars, will you?
These? They're not very good, except for children, just toys.
Well, I like to play with toys. May I see a pair?
Certainly. Here you are.
Thanks.
If you point them outside, you'll get a better idea of what they'll do.
Oh, I'm getting a good idea right here.
Excuse me, I'll be right back, sir.
Uh-huh. I watched Miss Terry Vaughn in that phone booth. The binoculars weren't very good, but I saw the numbers she dialed and remembered them. She spoke for a few seconds, hung up, dropped another coin and dialed another number. I got that one, too. Then the clerk came back.
They work all right, sir?
Oh, they're marvelous, just marvelous. How much are they?
$2.95.
Here you are.
Shall I wrap them?
Got any kids?
Huh? I mean, yes.
Well, here's a present for them.
But you just bought them.
Well, you see, I like your kids. You take these.
But, sir, I can't take these, or can I?
I walked back outside and got to the pavement before Terry Vaughn finished her second phone call. I was standing there when she came out.
Well, there we are. All set.
Make your call, all right?
Yes. Now, how'd you like to see the town?
I'd love it. Come on, let's go. We spent a pleasant afternoon, but my mind wasn't on my work. I was trying to keep those phone numbers straight in my head. Then Terry had to go to the club for rehearsal. As soon as she left me, I headed for a phone booth and dialed the first number she'd called.
Hello?
Hello, Bill?
Bill? What number do you want?
Is Bill there?
There's no Bill here, I'm sorry.
You're sure there's no Bill there?
No, you got a wrong number, bud.
Wrong number, huh? Maybe, maybe not. I dialed the second number she'd called. Hello, who's this?
Hendricks. Who's that?
Hendricks. This is Holiday.
Holiday? What's up?
Listen, did Terry Vaughn place a bet this afternoon?
Yeah, on the 4th.
Did she win?
She had 50 on the winner's nose.
Look, she was with me when she made the bet.
You heard her make it?
No, she was in a phone booth. Was that the only bet she made?
That was enough.
How many winners did you have in that race?
6 of the other 20 people had the winner.
How about the other races?
3rd, 4th, and 5th. All winners among the 20 people.
Uh-huh.
You got the gimmick?
Maybe. But I've got to prove it. Listen, just sit tight, Bert. Don't open your mouth. Don't let out a peep. And above all, don't try to see me.
But, Dan, if you know anything, please.
I don't know whether I know anything or not. But I'll find out tomorrow at the track. Later that evening, I made a purchase. A very important one. Then I called Terry Vaughn and asked her to go to the track with me the next day. It took a little persuasion, but she finally said yes. So the next afternoon, with my purchase in the pocket of my top coat, Miss Vaughn and I went to the track. And up in the stands...
Do you know, Dan, this is the first time I've been here this season.
Oh, I thought you liked racing.
Oh, I do, but... Well, being at the track makes me nervous.
Nervous? Why?
Oh, no reason at all.
Which horse do you like in this race?
Oh, I'm not going to bet.
Oh, now, with your luck...
I don't want to force it.
I see. Well, I don't blame you.
Why don't you go ahead and bet?
All right, you pick a horse for me.
Think my luck will rub off on you?
Could be. Go ahead. Pick one.
Well, let's see. How does this one sound, Bright Angel?
Bright Angel it is, in the 3rd.
It's almost post time.
Uh-huh. Well, these are good seats.
Yes, they are.
I reached into my pocket and took out the important purchase I had made the previous evening and started to unwrap it.
What's that, Dan?
Oh, I just bought this, a portable radio. I wonder if I can hear the race on it.
Don't turn that on.
But why not?
Put down that radio, Mr. Holiday. Put it down.
Why don't you want me to turn it on?
You're just a little too smart, Mr. Holiday. This is a gun in my purse. You're getting out of here. Go on.
I carry radios. You carry guns. You're well equipped.
Go on. Lead the way.
Okay. She was as cool as an Arctic winter. And she handled the gun nicely. kept it in the small of my back under her handbag. Somehow I knew she'd use it if she had to. We got to her car, and a half hour later, she marched me into a room where a man sat wearing a pair of headphones. He looked up as we came in.
Hello, Terry. Who's this?
A smart boy, Tim. I'm leaving him with you.
Smart boy?
Mm-hmm. He's wise. How he got that way, I don't know. But after the fifth race cleanup, we're leaving town.
Well, it's about time. We couldn't run this racket forever.
You know, Mr. Holliday, you're lucky you didn't come along sooner.
Yes, I know. Before you made your take.
That's right. How did you figure it?
Through a 295 pair of binoculars. I saw the numbers you dialed yesterday.
Oh, you should be with us.
Hmm. Let's see. That thing there is a wire recorder. You tap into the broadcast line that runs from the track to the radio station without the station's knowledge. You record the broadcast, then play it back into the broadcast line 2 minutes after the regular airtime.
You are smart.
And those 2 minutes give you enough time to place bets on sure things. You already know the winners, but the bookmakers don't.
Correct.
But you only pull this on the middle three races of the card, so that latecomers and those who leave the track early won't catch wise by listening to their radios.
Right again. The broadcast is delayed 2 minutes. The race is already over before the bookmakers even think it started. Sit down, Mr. Holliday. Watch him, Tim.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to clean up a few odds and ends. Goodbye, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, we'll see each other again.
Oh, I doubt that very much. Goodbye. And be very happy that some of my luck did rub off on you.
Smart dame, smart dame. Knows angles.
Yes, I can see that.
Yeah, we make a take here and then move on. Now, you just sit still, Bub. I got some work to do, but I can still watch you.
I watched him, too. The wire recorder was spinning. He flipped a switch, and I knew what happened. The third race at the track was over, but the broadcast of it was going over the air now, 2 minutes later. Then...
Now, we sit tight for a while.
Say, that wire recorder, I've never seen one before.
Great gadgets, yeah. Great. I make recordings of my own voice all the time.
Oh? You mean all you do is talk into that little microphone and your voice is recorded right away?
Mm-hmm. Hey, you want to say something?
Hey, you're obliging.
Oh, sure, anything to pass the time. Gets dull in here. Go on, say something, and we'll play it back for you. Go on.
Well, what'll I say?
Oh, anything. First thing comes to your mind.
Well, my name is Dan Holliday. I'm being held prisoner at 758 Condo Street at the point of a gun. Please help.
Oh, great. Just great. Don't you wish someone on the outside could really hear that?
Yeah, I guess I do. Now, you mean that thing will play it right back, huh?
Sure. Just got to switch from the record to playback, that's all.
He turned his back for a second and flipped a switch. I flipped a switch, too, and waited.
Well, my name is Dan Holliday. I'm being held prisoner at 758 Condo Street at the point of a gun. Please help.
See? That's all there is to it.
Well, well, well. What do you know about that? Isn't science wonderful?
Yeah, sure is. Too bad you had to come along and spoil this racket, mister. But I guess we made a big enough take. And keep your hands up, mister. I can shoot and answer the phone at the same time. Yeah?
Tim, what happened?
Happened? Nothing. Why? The guy is...
Listen, get out of there fast and take him with you. We'll take care of him later, but get out of there fast.
Terry!
Something wrong?
I don't know. Get up and move out. Go on.
I did. But I did something else first. We walked out of the place, a gun in my ribs. I hoped what I'd done would work. We walked up the street a piece, and then...
That's cops. All right, duck in here. Go on, in this hallway. Now, just keep quiet and let them go past. Guess they won't find nobody there, will they?
No, I guess not. Well, what now?
Well, wait for a minute, and we go. All right. Now get in front of me and stay there. Go on.
Drop that gun.
What? Who?
Better drop it. There are a lot of cops.
Okay. Don't shoot.
Dan Holliday. You all right?
Sure, Hendricks. Did you hear my broadcast?
Yeah. Your voice cut in right in the middle of the regular broadcast.
Huh? I don't get it. How'd they find us? How'd they trail us?
Oh, look on your coattail, Tim. You didn't know it, but when we left that room, I hooked the end of the wire from the recorder on your coat. You see, Tim, you were wired for sound.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13.
Box 13, on Tuned 2 yesterday from May 1st, 1949 on Mutual. Only a couple of weeks earlier, Alan Ladd starred on the Camel Screen Guild Theater alongside Veronica Lake, reprising his role as Johnny Morrison in a radio adaptation of his Oscar-nominated noir motion picture, The Blue Dahlia. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of The Fat Man called The Nightmare Murder, heard on ABC on January 17, 1951.
There he goes. He's stepping on the scales. Weight, 237 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
The Fat Man. Like any solid, normal, routine job, this one began in my office. It was just after lunch. My feet were on the desk. I was munching a peppermint. And I'd popped the latest edition just south of the bulge that marked the last resting place of a brace of breaded pork chops. When the phone rang. Runyon speaking.
The detective?
That's a debatable point, but I like to think so. Who's this?
My name's George Dutton. Maybe you've heard of me.
Oh, you mean the author?
Well, that's a debatable point, too. I write mystery stories.
Yes, I know. About private eyes who get hit on the head.
Look, I've never had any need for a private eye. I don't even know what one looks like. I never even saw a pistol or a gangster or a corpse until last night. A corpse, that is.
Wait a minute. Let's take this in sequence. Are you hiring me?
Maybe. How much?
50 in expenses.
Well, that's a lot, but I need you pretty badly.
What's the trouble?
I killed a girl last night. I want you to prove it.
Say that again and slower.
You better come down here right away.
Where are you?
Melville Hospital. Alcoholic ward.
The closest I'd ever been to the alcoholic ward at Melville was reading The Lost Weekend. After I convinced them I wasn't a prospective client, they gave me some of the dope on George Dutton. Their assumption was his writer's imagination had picked up an Italian collaborator during the period in question, namely a batch of martinis.
Runyon?
Yeah, what can I do for you, George?
Sit down. On the bed. Now, take it easy, will you? My head.
I know what you mean. Is that better?
Yeah. Now, look. You're going to think I'm crazy like the rest of them, but I'm not paying you for an opinion. Here. Here's 2 days' worth, $100.
Thanks. Now, for this, I'm supposed to hang a murder rap on you, huh? Or did I hear it right over the phone?
You did. At least I'll know, Runyon, if it happened. If I killed her, at least I'll know I'm not crazy.
All right,
anything's
George,
better than that kind of doubt, Runyon. Anything.
Now, take it easy, George. Just tell me about it, huh?
Yeah. I know. Calm, collected, lucid, logical, right? Yeah. Okay. I've been working hard, see? Trying to meet my publisher's deadline on a novel. I got tired last night around 7 and went to bed. Dead, wrung out, gone, you know? Now, this I'm sure of. Somewhere around 10 or 11 o'clock, I got up, put on my clothes, and went out for a walk around the block. I just turned the corner when it happened.
What?
I'd seen the car a lot in my neighborhood, a black Buick convertible. I'd seen the girl in it, too. Stunning girl, blonde. Eyes like sapphires, figure like, well...
Yeah, I know what you mean. So what?
So she So she pulled up to the curb and asked me to get in.
How come?
Well, am I so horrible? She did it, that's all.
Okay. Who was she?
I don't know. I don't know anything about her. She handed me a bottle, and that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. Mistake number one.
You're so right. So anyway, we drove around for a while, and I listened to her talk, and pretty soon the bottle was gone, so she pulled out another one, and pretty soon that one was gone, too.
What did she talk about?
Death?
Hmm?
Yeah. It seemed perfectly normal at the time. She was fascinated by death, wrote poems about it, she said, quoted from them all the time. Anyway, things got pretty fuzzy about then. I don't remember much. People, voices, lights. One thing, though, Runyon. One thing. There was a big red rooster about 10 feet high.
Oh, yeah, naturally. Wouldn't be an evening without one. What was his
now,
name?
Now, wait a minute. A sign, Runyon, a neon sign. I remember it blinking at me while she stopped by the trash can.
What trash can?
How do I know what trash can? A trash can. There was the red rooster and the trash can, and she stopped and took something out of her purse and dropped it in. And there were more lights and more people and more riding in the car, and then pretty soon we were alone, and she was pouring drinks for the two of us.
And where was this?
I don't know. You got me. She handed me a glass, see? And raised hers for a toast. To death, she said. And I saw she had a gun in her hand, pointing it at her head. I grabbed it, got a hold of it, but it went off.
Oh, great.
Last thing I remember was her lying on the floor, and then the floor was rushing up at me. Well, that's it.
What do you mean, that's it? What happened after that?
Nothing. When I opened my eyes, I was in my own bed, in my own apartment, with my clothes right where I'd left them at 7 the night before. A nightman swears I wasn't out of my room all night. Nobody believed me. They said I dreamed it. I had a couple more drinks, found the cop on the beat and told him, too. That's how I got here. They all think I'm crazy. Well, maybe I am. Maybe I am. But go on. Find out for me, Runyon. Get on it, will you? Get on it.
So I got on it. First, there was the janitor, George's apartment.
Listen, Mr. Runyon, I've been nightman here for 12 years. I know George Dutton as long as he lives here. He couldn't leave this building last night without me seeing him, and I didn't see him. You can take my word, he's nuts.
Then there was the bartender George had mentioned.
Look, all I know is he come in at an indecent hour this morning, screaming for the hair of the dog that bit him, just like all the other times. Yeah, especially the last time.
What happened last time?
Oh, same thing, a couple of years ago. Only that night he got out of bed and trapped Adolf Hitler in the information booth at Grand Central.
The cop who'd hauled him over to Melville said the same thing. Likewise, a couple of newsboys. Verdict, unanimous. George was a lush and a loony, and I was inclined to go along with him. On the theory that a special convertible, complete with blonde, is something even a New Yorker will stop and look at, I quizzed the service stations around George's apartment house. Sure enough, up comes a guy who'd greased its gold-plated chassis only a month before. The record showed it belonged to a Lydia Bradshaw at a Park Avenue address that went with the car, so I trotted over. Some kind of a soiree was going on in the huge living room. The butler looked at me, raised his eyebrows one at a time, and finally decided I wouldn't run off with the silver plate and hustled me into the library, which seemed to have another occupant.
As a spirit with yellow eyes gleaming, will I to thy couch. Come again.
When you say that smile, what is it?
This book, Baudelaire. Lousy translation. By the way, I'm Joan Cameron, Lydia's poor country cousin. Who are you? One of Uncle Charles' tribe of sycophants?
Well, I'm not sure what that means, but I don't think so. My name's Brad Runyon.
Oh.
Where is Lydia, by the way?
Out somewhere. You looking for her?
Yeah.
Well, you're just in time. She and Uncle Charles are going abroad, you know, sailing tonight.
Oh, who's Uncle Charles?
Lydia's guardian. Keep her to the keys to the Bradshaw Exchequer.
Well, that sounds important.
It is.
Oh, and the chips, huh?
Oh, no. He just has a pair of scissors to clip the coupons for Lydia, which, incidentally, is a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And that concludes my dissertation on the Bradshaws, a morbid subject at best. Let's talk about you.
Sure, sweetheart. After we talk about a quick way I can get a hold of Uncle Charles.
I beg your pardon?
This friend is Uncle Charles.
Pretty quick. How do you do, Mr. Bradshaw?
Ah, Mr. Runyon, isn't it?
It is. And now, if you'll excuse me.
Strange girl. Now, Mr. Runyon.
I've come on a peculiar errand, Mr. Bradshaw. When do you expect your niece Lydia back?
Oh, in an hour, perhaps two. Why?
I wonder if she'd consider making a short visit to Melville Hospital.
Melville? Good heavens, what for?
A client of mine thinks he killed her last night.
Now, just a minute. What kind of nonsense is this?
I know it sounds crazy, but it isn't nonsense. His name's George Dutton, and he's in the alcoholic ward. He fell off the wagon last night, but hard. He has seen your niece riding around her convertible. She impressed him. So, instead of the usual pink elephants, he had some hallucination about taking a ride with her last night and killing her. We can't talk him out of it.
Well, that's fantastic. What do you want Lydia to do about it?
Well, just stop by the hospital and convince him he's wrong, that's all.
But don't you understand we're sailing for Europe at midnight?
Now, look, this will only take her 10 minutes. It may mean the man's sanity.
Well...
Otherwise, he's liable to be running around to the police and the newspapers.
Oh... Well, I'll ask Lydia to drop by.
Good, and thanks. I'll be running along then. Sorry to trouble you, Mr. Bradshaw.
Well, what's the verdict, Runyon? You think I'm nuts now too, huh?
George, listen. Get a hold of yourself. This doesn't mean you're nuts. Could happen anyway.
Shut up. What was her name?
Lydia Bradshaw.
Bradshaw?
Yeah, and she's coming over here to see you.
Now listen, Runyon, you're working for me. See, you're not working for them. You're
now,
working...
wait a minute, George.
You listen to me. I'm telling you this happened. I was there. I wasn't in bed dreaming it. This dame is dead. Do you understand that?
Shut up over there.
I won't shut up.
I'm telling you, kids, you'll go off your rocker.
Now, look, Doc, wait. Look, George, there's no use arguing about it. I talked to her uncle. The girl's coming here. That'll convince you, won't it?
She's not coming here because she's dead. She's dead. I held her with these two arms. I heard the gun go off. I felt her go limp in my arms. In my arms. Oh, no. No.
I'm sorry. Who's George Duff?
Right over there.
I'm Lydia Bradshaw.
Well, what about it, George?
You're all right.
What do you mean, Mr. Dutton?
Well, last night we were together. Don't you remember?
Well, no. Sorry, I don't. I don't remember ever seeing you before.
Go away. Go away.
Come on.
Isn't there anything I can do?
No, you may as well go now.
But the poor man...
You heard what he said. Now go on. Get out of here. Get out!
I'm terribly sorry.
Thanks very much, Miss Bradshaw.
I do hope it'll be all right.
Yeah. Good night.
Goodbye.
Well, George, is that the girl?
Yeah. That's the girl.
So that tied it up. I refunded him $50 of the $100 he gave me, recommended a good psychiatrist, and took off. It was after my dinner time, so I walked toward the East 50s, a little Italian restaurant that makes wonderful lasagna. Suddenly, I found myself looking across the street at a bar on the opposite corner with a blazing red rooster in neon lights. Of course, he could have dreamed this, too. In his heyday, he probably knew every pub in town. But the business of the trash can opposite the entrance, which was right where he said it was pretty accurate dreaming, even for a professional dreamer like George. For this reason, I decided to sacrifice my dignity. I sidled up to the trash can and began probing around. It was there, a slim volume in black Morocco with gold lettering on the cover reading Skyward, Poems in Praise of Death by Lydia Bradshaw. I kicked myself for refunding that $50. I stood for a minute in the glow of the Red Rooster sign and thumbed through the book of poems. Then I went into the bar.
Yes, sir, what'll you have?
Make it a beer.
Any special kind?
Well...
Now, how about a tall, cool glass of McCoy's Pale Ale?
That sounds like a commercial.
It is. See the sign up there? Don't let them fool you, brother. Reach for the real McCoy.
Okay, I'm sold. Draw one.
Right.
I quaffed my real McCoy and skimmed through Lydia's Odes to the Dark Angel. Tossing a Morocco-bound book into a trash can, it seemed a strange thing for a girl to do until you read the poetry, whereupon it became clearly the only thing to do. It was so awful, I gave up trying to read it and concentrated on the frontispiece, which, as with all privately printed works, was a picture of the author. Looking at it now, it seemed to me as if I'd seen Lydia Bradshaw somewhere before. Somewhere before she'd walked into George's room at the hospital. But I couldn't put my finger on it.
How about another real McCoy?
No. Wait a minute. Don't go away.
Yeah?
Were you here last night?
Sure. Why?
Here, take a look at this picture. You ever seen her?
Who is she?
Name's Lydia Bradshaw. Was she in here last night?
I don't know. Maybe, but I don't remember seeing her.
Hmm.
She came in with the after-theater bunch. I wouldn't remember anyway. Marvin here four deep at the bar.
Why, Frank?
Huh? Oh, excuse me, I got
to... Wait a minute, Frank. What do you mean you don't know Lydia?
Well, I didn't say that, Miss Cameron.
Frank?
I didn't say I don't know her. I only said I wouldn't remember if she was in here during rush hour last night. Excuse me, I got a customer waiting.
Customer, my foot. The liar. Oh, please don't think I'm dogging your footsteps, Mr. Runyon.
How do you happen to come here?
Always do.
You say he knows your cousin, Lydia Bradshaw?
He ought to. She owns the place. Tell me, did you steal that book from the library?
Oh, no. I picked it out of the trash can outside.
What?
Yeah, it's Scout's Honor.
Well, it's the only one she has left. She'd die before she'd throw it away.
How about afterwards?
What do you mean?
No, just skip it. Here, look at this inscription on the flyleaf. To Greg, someday I'll find you. What does she mean by that?
Greg Stanhope. She used to think she was in love with him. Maybe she was, I don't know. But Uncle Charles decided it was wrong and broke it up. A fatal mistake, I might add.
Why fatal?
They found Greg the next day with a champagne glass in one hand and a gun in the other. He'd shot himself.
Hello, George?
Yeah?
This is Runyon.
What do you waste your time on me for, Runyon? I'm nuts, you know. I'm
now,
crazy.
Now, shut up, George. Take it easy. Ask me a couple of questions. Do you know anybody named Stanhope?
Greg Stanhope?
Yeah.
No, I never heard of him.
Uh-huh. How did you happen to say Greg?
I don't know. It just popped into my head. Greg Stanhope. It goes together somehow. Greg... Wait a minute. I do know. Yeah, she was talking about him last night. That's who she toasted when she raised her glass just before she
shot. Okay. Now, one more question, George. Did anyone see you leave the building last night?
Well, sure, the janitor.
Anyone else?
No.
Well, look, supposing it went like you said. Suppose someone picked you off the floor at the Bradshaw apartment and brought you home. Is there anyone who'd know exactly where to hang your clothes and straighten out the rest of your apartment besides you?
Sure, the janitor would, but he already told
you. He's got a couple of sidelines. George, as a writer, this may come as a disappointment to you, but you aren't nuts.
Listen, Mr. Runyon, get your foot out of my door before
I... Now, take it easy, pal. I'm coming in.
I already told you all I know about George Dutt.
That I'm inclined to doubt. Now, sit down, pal. You've had a hard day pushing a broom and raking in cash.
You want I should call a cop? There's a law against breaking into a guy's apartment.
There's also a law against criminal conspiracy.
I said I give it to you this afternoon, all of it. Don't call me no criminal conspiracy because I'm janitor, no criminal, see?
How much did Charles Bradshaw pay you to tell me George wasn't out of his apartment last night?
I don't know nothing, I tell you. Now get out of here.
Now you come clean first. You saw George coming and going. You helped Bradshaw put him to bed last night.
No, I didn't. Honest, I didn't.
You better level with me, Buster, before
no.
I'd knock...
No. Don't come near me.
Someone had fired through the window and nailed the janitor before I could make him talk. I rushed over, opened the window, and hit the back alley in half a minute flat, but it was too late. A car roared off half a block away, and that was that. I walked back to where the killer must have stood, trying to make sense out of nonsense. I'd run into my share of murders, but this was the first time in my book that someone committed one to cover up another one someone else had confessed to. Now, if that sounds confusing, it's only because it was. A party was going on three floors up. It was nice to know someone was having a good time because I wasn't. I leaned back against the wall and mopped my head. There had to be an answer somewhere. And it was lucky I'd leaned back, or I would have been brained. A bottle whistled down three floors and glanced off my shoulder and bounced into some soft rubbish in the alley. I picked it up, looked at the label, and suddenly it hit me. It was an answer from out of the blue. "Don't let them fool you, brother," it said. "Reach for the real McCoy." I found a phone and called the hospital and left instructions for George. Then I hailed a cab and rushed over to Lydia Bradshaw's apartment. What time is it, Miss...
Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bradshaw.
It's almost 11. As I told you, Mr. Runyon, Uncle Charles is extremely busy taking care of the baggage and won't have time to talk to you before we sail.
Yeah, sure, I know. How come he forgot that trunk over there, Miss...
Bradshaw.
Yes, Bradshaw. I'm having a tough time with that name. What about that trunk?
It's full of his first editions for the vault while we're gone.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see. Where was I?
Will you stop reading that stupid book?
Stupid? Listen to this. "Astride the cosmic threshold, I gazed back toward the old familiar lighted realm once more. Then resolute to turn my face the new way. Toward the wild, unlighted shore." Three guesses now. Byron, Keats, or Nick Kenny?
I don't know, and I don't care.
Well, you ought to know, baby. You wrote it.
What do you mean, Mr. Runyon?
"Poems in Praise of Death" by Lydia Bradshaw. This mean anything to you?
It's an empty beer bottle, isn't it?
Yeah. Someone almost brained me with it tonight. McCoy's Pale Ale. "Don't let them fool you, brother. Reach for the real McCoy." Still don't remember?
Should I?
Yeah. Took me a while, but I did. I wondered why you looked familiar to me.
Me?
Yeah. You two girls, two pictures. One of these girls is Lydia Bradshaw, Park Avenue debutante, and the other is a professional model. Which one is the real McCoy? It was an ad in all the magazines 3 years ago.
Figured out which is which by now, I presume.
Yeah. Why did you play along with him?
Is there any harm in it?
Well, I can think of about six laws you're breaking, not the least of which is criminal conspiracy.
Criminal? What are you...
Just a minute, Lydia. Stay where you are, both of you.
Oh.
My name's not Lydia. Let's stop the pretense.
Gonna make it a double header tonight, Uncle Charles?
I might.
Double what?
Murder.
Murder? What are you...
Shut up.
But murder... I didn't know anything about this. All you said was she'd killed herself and you wanted to avoid a scandal about suicide.
It was a scandal, all right, but not about suicide, was it, Uncle Charles?
But what was it?
When Lydia killed herself last night, it threw the whole estate into the hands of the executors, opened the books to the accountants. How much had you embezzled, Uncle Charles? A couple of hundred G's, maybe?
More than that, Runyon. But you're wrong on a technicality. It's not a scandal, not unless it gets out. And it's not going to get out. I killed once. They can't do any more to me but two or three.
You can't cover it that way, Bradshaw.
No? Watch me, Runyon. Watch me.
But don't, Mr. Bradshaw. No.
Hey, Runyon. Runyon, this is the place.
George,
I'm here.
You're just in time.
Huh? Who?
You've killed him.
No, but he's going to have quite a headache. The McCoy Company puts out a good bottle, too.
Oh.
Catcher?
Two down. Put her on the sofa, George, while I call headquarters.
Yeah. Lydia Bradshaw.
No, no. This is the reasonably accurate facsimile. We'll find Lydia Bradshaw in that trunk over there.
Well, then I did kill her.
No, no, you didn't. She committed suicide, but her guardian didn't dare let it be known, or he'd have been discovered as an embezzler.
What do you mean?
Skip it for now. I need a drink. How about you?
Runyon, if it's all the same to you, I'll take sarsaparilla.
The Fat Man, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode heard on ABC on January 17, 1951. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.